Proverbs chapter 1. Thank you, sir. You did well. You must be one of them Montgomery boys. We'll look at the subject of wisdom. You know, it's interesting. Somewhere when someone's anywhere between the ages of 16 and 21, they get their wisdom teeth. Say, why do you call them wisdom teeth? Because of old, people used to think that's about the time you got wisdom, you got those teeth. Well, when I joined the Air Force, the first thing they did was examine my wisdom teeth, my wisdom, and they jerked the teeth. Right? Again, we live in an age where now juvenile is anybody up to 26 years old. I've talked to different ones. I've talked to my boys. I know I've been talking with Nick here lately, and it's just been a joy, really. But, you know, if you had watched Gettysburg, Antietam, you'd have seen 15, 16-year-old men standing there. And some of them falling, some of them marching on. And when that war was over, going home, like what you see the Amish do today, buy that farm next door, put some cattle in there, go over and talk to that girl that's been, that used to flirt with them in the back of the school building, or bat her eyes across the fence, and talk to her dad and take her to wife. She's 17 now, he's 18 or 19. And he'd provide for her. He'd be a father to her children. Those cattle wouldn't want. You look at the hay barns those men built before tractors. Look at the hay barn where a man would stand. You just drive around Pennsylvania to New York and think of that man who stood there and looked at those fields and said, me and my boys can bring that hay in and fill that barn just absolutely chock full. It's hard for men with tractors today to fill those barns, okay? But they would do that. And nowadays, you get a young man that age, somebody has to coddle him. Somebody burp him a little bit. You know, if you feed him, somebody has to work his jaws. He's too lazy to do it himself, you know, and such. And it's hurt us as a nation. It certainly hurt the young men. I grieve for the young ladies. I grieve for them. And the book of Proverbs has a great promise. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1 just says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction and to perceive the words of understanding. You know, one of the most common refrains you'll hear from adults is the idea that when I was 18, I knew everything. And, you know, and we all think back to that. You know, at 18, you think you know everything and such. And, but even at 18, I knew I didn't know everything. The problem is I couldn't sort it out, okay? I couldn't sort out what I really knew, what I didn't know. And I had opinions that were unjust opinions. But I was too immature, and I didn't have enough facts to understand. They're not just opinions that I have. And, you know, I'd go out and spout them and such. And it's interesting because in the days when those young men could go out there and start a farm at 18, 19 years old and have a family, they weren't allowed to vote. Nobody trusted them with something like that. Nobody trusted them at all. Now when you have young men who can't even stay off of psychedelic drugs or need 42 doctors to be able to think straight or whatever else and such, we want them to vote. And you wonder why the country is like it is. It's because they're voting, and the other thing is they're voting with a majority. The majority is just like them, okay? It's just a mess. But I do remember when I began to crave to have wisdom. Sometimes it's just because I'd be in a real pickle. Sometimes it'd be because I'd really done such outlandish things and shame was eating me up. And not everybody's been through this. There's a few of you that know what I'm going to say, but I know what it's like to go to a family gathering and really people kind of, okay? And where you're there and it's kind of an embarrassment, everybody's trying to put up with it, you came. And Dale certainly feels that and knows that. He and I can talk about that and such. And you feel that. You know that. You know that they feel that way about it. And in your inward senses, you know that they're just in thinking that. Okay? And so for me, when I found this book of Proverbs and understood that in here is how to have wisdom. And I'll never forget living in that barracks that I lived in overseas. And again, you have to understand the concept in the Air Force of what they called a remote site. A remote site is where they sent a man, but they did not feel that they could keep his wife and children up there. So they only sent men there for 1 year. And then you just had to leave your wife and children for 1 year. And so they had this barracks on top of this mountaintop, and back in the 60s it had been considered a remote site. Then the Greeks built a casino just about a couple miles down from it, made the road much better. They realized, wow, 45 minutes now, you can be down in the village. And so they made it an accompanied site so that men who were stationed there could bring their wives and children. So when I got there, here's a barracks built for 30 guys and only six single guys living in a full gym, theater, cafeteria, you know, all this stuff. I mean, it's kind of wonderful in a way to live in such a place. And it's on a game preserve, you know, we'd look out this huge stag to be standing back there. I could look out, see the Aegean Sea in the back, go out, look at the front window, see the Mediterranean Sea, the island of Evia where Paul walked and such. I could see that from where I was. And it was kind of a marvelous thing. But, you know, when you live in a little community like that, and when the guys, you had two different types of guys. You had guys that worked shift work. And then you had what we called the day ladies, the ones that worked 8 hours a day. Those were the day ladies. They'd always come up at 8 or 9 o'clock and all the day ladies are here. You know, it'd be the captain and the first sergeant, the different, you know, administrative personnel and such, as opposed to the real men, you know. But you have this little community and such in there. And it didn't take a long time for a fool to be exposed for being a fool. You couldn't hide it, okay? It's one of those, you can't hide a fool being a fool. And it didn't take long before there were a lot of people that had my measure. This man is a fool. Doesn't mean they didn't enjoy going out drinking with me, and doesn't mean they didn't enjoy playing foosball with me or something like that. But I began to crave not to be a fool. And I remember one particular time listening to two men argue. And I was listening to their argument, and I thought, you know what? I just need to go settle this. And then a proverb came into my head. And that proverb said, it's like grabbing a dog's ears. Don't get involved in that. And so, not because I had any inner wisdom, but that proverb said, leave that alone. And I remember waking up the next morning and not being ashamed of what went on. I remember waking up the next morning and realizing that I didn't have this huge knockdown drag out with these guys, and realized that book gave me wisdom. You know, another thing that it said was this, that a fool, by keeping his mouth closed, nobody knows he's a fool. And many a time since then, I have stood and people talk to me, and here's the inner picture in my head. I picture a castle, and I picture a window, and I picture somebody down there talking in the window, and the court fool's looking out the window at them. But they don't know it. That Bible said, if I keep my mouth shut, they won't know it. I just, you know, they walk away, and they never realize they were talking to the fool. They were talking to the court jester. They were talking to an idiot, and they never knew it. That book told them they didn't know it. Okay? And so I began to borrow wisdom from Solomon. And after a while, some of it became mine. Okay? And it's a wonderful thing. And so Solomon talks about this thing in verse 3, to receive the instruction of wisdom justice and judgment and equity. Equity means keeping things equal, okay? To give subtlety to the simple. You know, everybody knows somebody who just always says the wrong thing at the wrong time, all right? And, you know, they're just noted for that. And my mother tells the story of some neighbors of hers. There were two families that lived together, and she was just a little girl. And one time the families were together, and she made the comment, "Isn't it interesting that all Mrs. So-and-so's children look like Mr. So-and-so?" She was just a little girl, and everybody, whoop. You know, it was just a child's observation. That's one of the problems with children, is they see things and such. And you know what? No one can blame a child for that. There was nothing wrong. She did no sin. She was a child. She was in innocence to say that. But at the same time, it'd be nice to give discretion, you know, to the simple, and that they understand not to say that kind of thing. So I think many of us in our life have craved to be able to be there. To be that person who has those words to say at the right time. So to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. And you know, the lack of knowledge can really hurt you. Knowledge puffeth up. I know that well. I think people who have listened to me preach realize I have a lot of Bible knowledge. But I can tell you this. You put it in a person of bad character, it destroys them. I've lived that. I've lived where the knowledge I have puffed me up and was destroying me because I did not have the proper character to carry the knowledge that God gave me. And I can just tell you, it's a grievous situation. It brings reproach to the knowledge of God, brings reproach to the man carrying it. It's an awful thing. I so love it when God teaches knowledge the proper way because he tempers it with chastisement. He tempers it with blessings. He tempers it in real life. He tempers it with molding the man's life. And it's just something that needs to be. So the young man gave him knowledge and then discretion. Should I say something or not say something? Should I tell her or should I not tell her? Discretion. And it's a torture sometimes to wonder that stuff. And, you know, one of the nice things is, you know, I'm in my 60s now, and a lot of times it's just obvious to me. People come up and ask me questions. It's just obvious to me what the answers are. And I thank God for that. Sometimes I don't know in my own life, but I can, and I really do see them in others. It's part of being a pastor, I guess, that idea. And you know that. You know, you just... God gives you, it's a gift, and he, you know, you're a gift to those people, and he just shows you that. I remember as a child watching our cat have kittens, and of course, it's one of the wonders, you know, children should grow up with pets. You know, that's just, it's just a wonderful thing when they have them and such, and I never forget that cat. It'd been such a wild cat. It really had. The first cat we got, I remember we went over to Tillo's and picked one of the black cats out of their litter and such and brought it. And the first thing it did is ran out the road and got squashed. We all cried. So my dad went over there and they chased through the barn for the cat that didn't want to be caught for a couple of hours because it was the other black cat. They finally got it. You know, they brought it and, you know, set it down in the backyard and it just ran to the hayfield in the back. We thought that's the end of that. And about 2 weeks later, this bedraggled, starved cat crying at the edge of the there, and we'd put food out for it and such, and it would eat and run back up and that. 18 years later, you know, and my mother and that cat still, you know, I'd see my mother, get out of this house, get the stink blown off you, you know, throw that cat out and such. And they never did agree on the laundry. A lot of things that they agreed on. Now, you can't get on the table, you can't get on the chair. That laundry basket was that point where they just never agreed on it. For 18 years, whether or not the cat was allowed to sleep on it. But I watched that cat have kittens, and I watched the marvelous change in it. I remember we had this buffet piece of furniture sitting there, and the box with a kitten sat next to it. That cat loved to sit up there, just watch it down there. And then they'd get to fighting, and one would chew on the other's ear, and you'd hear, and that cat would jump out, swat a couple of cats, and jump on them. Just sit there and watch, right? And a lot of times, as a pastor, you feel that way. You just kind of sit there watching things and such. And a lot of times, God really does show me what this person needs and what that person needs. And then I try with such wisdom as I have to say it to you. Because it's a powerful thing to say things like that to people and maybe inject things into their life and such. But I remember when I longed to have the ability to do it in my own life. Okay? In the 1960s, there was a singer by the name of Donovan, one of the hippie ones, but he just said, some man's trying to run my life, don't know what he's asking. He don't know how to run his own life. I'll be bleepity bleep if he'll run mine. Okay? And that was the attitude. What I long for, I guess, for the people in this church to be able to run their own lives with dignity, with God, with wisdom, with love, discretion, all those things. And it's promised here. Verse 5, a wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto counsels, to understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Again, the thing that hit me in that Amish conference, and by the way, if for some reason you had to miss Wednesday service, I understand that, but boy, out there was rich. Pastor Hain just going over that Amish conference and us going through it and such, it was really rich. But I was really struck by two Amish farmers who stood there and preached to us. No longer Amish, but saved and in the bowels of Jesus Christ. And it hit me how much those men grew up with a dread of God. I mean, just dreaded God. Feared in everything they did, what would God think of it here and there? Reminded constantly. And let me tell you something, it was to their good. Because each one of them, when they heard and understood that the gospel was freely given, Samuel Gerard just said he argued with Joe over and over that there have to be rules. And when Joe opened up and showed him in the book of Colossians where the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, God blotted them out, he said, I was saved instantly reading that. Instantly. Absolutely transformed from darkness to light. I mean, with that 100% sure, pure knowledge of Jesus Christ, these things are written that ye may know that Jesus Christ is in. There it is, okay? That's missing today. You search Allegheny County, other than Amish young men, try to find me a young man that has that kind of dread of God. Try to find him. And again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Pastor Hain, but I wonder a lot. Just, it's a wonderment. I guess just what God did to you. And I saw it so fresh on Wednesday, and you talked about the death of your father and your mother having to go into a hospital for a while and your brother stepping in and such. But you know, at 13 years old, you understood what death was. At 15, again, you'd had a brother, spent 2 years talking to you about God. 15 and a half, he's already more of a man than most young men in Allegheny County are here at 25. Already more on his shoulders, and that great God of Israel came to him. Put his hand through the hole of the lock, and he didn't say, I can't come. He didn't say it's inconvenient for me. He came. You don't find that much anymore. Oh, it's glorious when you do, but you don't find it much. I think that's why Joe Kime is justified when he says if there's revival in America, it'll come through the Amish. Why? Because there's a people who are what used to be. Okay? What used to be. Can you imagine, Dick, going back and getting the graduating class when you graduated and your teachers and bringing them and showing them the world today? They wouldn't even be able to understand how it ever got there. Can you imagine that? John and Sharon Vash, your great grandparents, trying to look at what the world is today. They wouldn't be able to begin to conceive of how foul and awful and how low we have brought ourselves as a nation and as a people. One of the themes of my ministry is, since the times of Wycliffe, never have the English-speaking people been brought so low in sin and degradation. I spent yesterday morning with Dr. Eric Kessel, had him over to the house. With great wisdom, he's stepping into that Farmersville church, and I mean with great wisdom. And been ordained now and such, and I commended him on his wisdom, but I just was encouraging him in the idea that you are a missionary to the English-speaking people of Cattaraugus County, who are at a very low lot, who have been brought very low in degradation. And again, never since the days of Wycliffe have so many people so hurt themselves before they're even 25 years old. Tattoos they can't get rid of, felony convictions, addictions, bastard children, all the things, divorces that have happened to them. Brought so low. So low. And that man of God will go over there to Farmersville, and I believe he will love those people, and I believe he'll live among them, and I believe that he'll do the job there, and it's just a joy to me that he's doing that. Turn with me, if you would, Proverbs chapter 2. That's a long ways in the future. Here we go. Proverbs says, as Solomon saying this, you know what the sad part is? This is written to Rehoboam, my son. What a sad thing. And Rehoboam later in life, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart therefrom. You realize when Rehoboam was 41 years old, that later King Ahijah, under the anointing of God, said he was young and tender. He could not withstand the peer pressure. I look back at myself at 40 and realize, you know, I really was. Peer pressure meant far too much to me then. Far too much. Proverbs chapter 2, my son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and lifteth up thy voice for understanding. Crying for knowledge. Ruth Ann will tell you. You know, Pastor Randall, again, one of the combinations of probably one of the most ignorant men I have ever met in my life, combined with some of the most profound knowledge of God that I've ever run into. Say, what do you mean by that? He'd say things, well, put the coin on the other foot. His wife is a girl. Yep. A foot to him was always 1.6, a foot and a half. When he'd say a cubit, I'd say 1.6 feet. No, he said 1.5. But because 1.5 feet is 1 foot 6 inches, he never could get that straight. It was like 1.6. And, you know, his wife, Bill, she'd say. And you just always be amazed at the profoundness of this guy. It's like 10th grade. His father was a chain gang guard. I don't know a better way to describe it. His father used to come home at night when he was a child and take and put rock salt on the ground. And then take a leather strop that he has had sitting in lard in the hot sun. And then take that strop and slap that salt, put his foot on it, and get that salt into that strop. And he'd say, well, that guy won't sass me tomorrow. I won't say anything like that again to me tomorrow. Bill Randall, I've watched Bill Randall's mother sit in a rocking chair with snuff coming down here in this platoon next to her. I mean, I'm just telling you, they were a rough group. But you know what he used to do? He used to fast for days at a time and cry out to God because he couldn't understand a verse.
I want haven't eaten in 48 hours. You know I've got to get back on the truck. You know it. You know I've got these things to do, and I'm too weak to do them, and I vowed to you until you open my understanding on that verse, I will not eat.
He just had a relationship with God where he'd just get along with him, and he'd come out with stuff, and it was profound. To this day, I have never even heard of a man who knew as much Bible as that man knew, because he cried to God for knowledge. Cried to him. He just cried and begged God to teach him. Verse 3, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and lifteth up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures. You know, if we were to tell those Montgomery boys that somewhere down, you know, in the basement of that church, you know, when you go into the kitchen of the church, there's that door in the back, and you open it up, and it really comes out underneath this foyer part over here, and there's dirt mounded. If you were to tell Trevor and Zane there's treasure in that, how long do you think you could keep them out of it? Okay? You wouldn't keep them out of it in a million years. I mean, they'd be in there. They wouldn't care if their mother whooped them, if their dad kicked them. They wouldn't care what went on. They're just going to get in there and find it. All right? But you know what? He says, do that for wisdom and knowledge. Seek for it like silver or hidden treasure. Do that. Verse 5, then shall thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. That's how it's going to happen to you. That's where it's going to come from. It says this, verse 6, for God giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shall thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. Well, wouldn't that be something if you really understood all those things? You're just somebody that had it. And he's offering you that. He's saying you can have that life. This can be something that you have, okay? But you got to cry for it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire above all things to have that. Verse 10, when wisdom entereth into thine heart, knowledge is pleasant to thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee. How many people here in the last year got into something that if you'd just been a little bit more discreet, you could have saved yourself a lot of trouble? You know? Boy, I just remember just almost always being in trouble with that. Almost always. Discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things. Froward is not forward. Froward is somebody who's always trying to keep you off balance, say the outrageous thing, won't ever quite be brought into harmony with what they're supposed to. That's what froward means. Similar to rebellious. You know what Psalm 18 says? Says of God, with the froward, thou wilt show thyself froward. Ever meet people who say God won't answer their prayers, and God almost gives them something, takes it away, and they can't get what they want? You know why? Because it says with the froward, God will show himself froward. Always that, that little twist, always that little thing, never quite conform, never quite get along, never quite be what you're supposed to, come close and never quite. And you know what? That's the only way some people know God, and he shows himself to them because that's what they are. And that's the promise of Psalm 18. With the froward, I will show myself froward. You know what he said? With the merciful, I'll show myself merciful. Mm-hmm. Okay? Well, what a God. What a God. Do you love being that person that never quite conforms? Do you love being that person that, boy, they can never get me to go along? And you know what? I'm not for you conforming to everything. I'm not for you being some peer-pressured person in the middle of it. You know, if I smoked, I'd smoke Marlboros. You know, that Marlboro man, always different or whatever. Yeah, I would. That's what I would be or something. I'm not going to be, and God, I hate smoking. All right? God knows it. But there's people who glory in never conforming. There's people who glory in always sticking out. And you know what? God glories in never conforming to them and always sticking out. Says so. We're froward, now we show thyself froward. And he just says this. Well, let's go and say verse 10. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, knowledge is pleasant to thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, deliver thee from the way of the evil man, the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they are froward in their paths, to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger who flattereth with her words. You know what made her the strange woman? It tells you in verse 17, which forsaketh the guide of her youth. What's that mean? It means when she was young, her mother taught her how to behave. Mm-hmm. When she was young, she was told this is what you're supposed to be. But she's not doing it now. She's forsaken it. It makes her the strange woman. Okay? And forgetteth the covenant of her God. She grew up in church. She grew up knowing what it's supposed to be. She grew up knowing all that stuff. But she's the strange woman because she forsook it. See? And you know what? Young men need a lot of discretion to stay away from such a girl. Because they can sing the hymns. They can look so good and such. But they're better trained for the back seat of a car than the front seat. Because they've forgotten the covenant that their mother brought them to in the house of God and the discretion their mother gave them. And young men need real bad to have the wisdom not to tangle with such a woman. Verse 18, for her house inclineth unto death, the paths unto death. We'll pick this up again next week. We're going to quit a little bit early just because Pastor Hain has got a little counseling and such to do. That's why we sang fewer songs and such. But Father, I thank you very much for this chance to be in the house of God, and I pray that you'd allow all of us to begin to cry out to you, and you'd help us and guide us in the knowledge and wisdom. And I pray this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.